afternoon, good evening, and good morning to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. You are joining me today on Humpty Hump Day, yes, my favorite day of the week, here on Living and Thriving, and I'm Rusty. So grateful to have you along today. Today is a very, very uncomfortable, very cold, miserable day outside, and the poor puppy, she wants nothing to do with going tinkle outside at all today. So it's been quite entertaining, to say the least, chasing a little puppy who refuses to go outside. Today, I have to say, I'm going to do something just a wee bit different. I've been hiring various creative individuals for my new marketing for the year 2014. And this poet called Call Me Ishmael wrote this beautiful, beautiful poem in on behalf of Living and Thriving with Rusty. So I'm going to share that, and then we're going to pull in Alice Griss. She's an author, a blogger, a mummy, and she's calling, I think it probably is dinner time for her. She's in England, so I'm looking forward to really getting to know her. She writes a lot of wonderful books on healing and inspiration and soul food. S-O-U-L-F-O-O-D, meaning feeding your soul. So let me share this poem with you. I want it to resonate. I want you to feel it. I was to tears. Beautiful words. Great, talented fella. So here you go.
What is a voice? Now you may say it's a sound produced in a person's larynx that rumbles through the lungs for a breath of vibrations to be accepted as and only into generic speech. Now that's basic terminology taken out of context due to the fact that we hear many styles of it on a regular basis. So much to the fact that eardrums become complacent and tend to forget that it's a magical feeling to hear words translated into sentence. Earth placed the ones gifted in speech near the blocks of ice to complete the cycle of life in the beginning of time. Driven into words, convictions would melt the walls and end thirst to awe and release the sun rays to reflect rainbows to pass on to tomorrow as we see them today. Most of these people were born before the season of spring. The scroll was found frozen on a cliff near a rare and almost forgotten to the human eyes of existence. It marvels and wind sings songs through the branches of the Japira tree. The Jupiter tree was the last of its kind and can be dated back to the family line inside the Garden of Eden. No other way to climb that high without falling from the sky. A little girl from the water tribe patiently awaited for patterns to be revealed through clouds as planets aligned with Uranus underneath the rising moon. She tiptoed on stars, for her curiosity of mystique ran wild like the beautiful lilies under the pass near the flowing stream. The story continues on as the scroll was passed on to the elders then to the chief. But only the girl could translate it because it was written in her own image. It was a gift that came from the sap of the tree. People from all over the world would come just to hear her speak. The tree lived its life, and the girl kept the seeds in a yellow pouch to her side. Generation after generation, the gift of telling a story was passed on through her bloodline. Silly as this sounds, this story is so close to the truth. I know of another who can control the curve of the waves that break near the water in the morning to unfold some beyond the horizon. A moment of happiness transitions into creation as Rusty corrodes through the norm of high frequency and radio. Living and thriving, inspiration absorbed into motivational speaking that was passed on through the water tribe in a scroll from the imagination of a little, young, sweet, beautiful girl. Like her ancestors did for those of the past, let and absorb Rusty's own blend of organic words as they mix into moods of harmonic, vibrant release combinations of citrus in the meadows of desired lyrics of unique patterns. The clouds compliment her with showers during the heat. Now take a seat and vibe, for she is the true definition of the voice.
Thank you, Call Me Ishmael. That was amazing, beautiful, stunning, humbling, and what a talented person. All I can say is I thought it was very fitting today because I think Alice Grist is also one of the people that were put in the blocks of ice to wait to share her story and to share her voice with all of you and all of the people that read her blog and her books. So good evening to you, my friend, Miss Alice. I'm glad we were finally able to connect.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. What time is it over there? About 7?
Six. It's 6 o'clock. So it's not too late.
That's too bad. I know that we tried to connect sometime over the winter, but your poor baby fell ill.
Yeah, she's had a real terror of a winter. She's not been teething and she's had a cold. So I think that's the way with young ones, that, you know, until they build up their immunity. So it's just been one thing after another. And she's been sneezing again today, of course. So probably another one coming along.
Oh, no, poor thing. Yeah, mine actually was, my daughter was this strange, toothy child, like shark. I used to tease her about being a shark because she would have multiple teeth come in at once, which led into the ear infection, then the sinus infection, and the whole gamut.
Yeah, we're working on 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's working on 5 at the minute, but I can see sort of just bursting through, and she's been sneezing a bit today. So it's probably teeth-related, but you know, you can never be quite sure. You just have to have a little faith that it will, you know, pass soon.
Absolutely. Well, so give us an idea of who you are. I don't even remember how the connection was made, but I know that I absolutely fell in love with your Dear Poppy Seed, A Soulful Mama's Pregnancy Journal. I just wanted to reach across the ocean and give you a big hug because that is one of the sweetest things I've read in a long time.
Oh, but thank you.
Not everybody knows who you are. So who are you, Miss Alice?
Right, well, I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, Dear Poppy Seed, that was my most recent book, and that it was quite a departure from my original books. My original books were writing about spirituality and getting to know spirituality and exploring it from a very modern day, very every woman kind of perspective. You know, I was brought up quite luckily with a spiritual background. My dad was a Church of England vicar, and he left the church and became a white witch. Sorry, you'll have to excuse this of any noise. I've got a house full of children downstairs, and I'm currently in a darkened room upstairs trying to find some peace. my dad was a vicar who turned a witch, but I had really, contradictory views on spirituality growing up, really interesting, different things. You know, I was brought up loving Jesus and the stories that come with that, and then, you know, that flipped on its head when I was a teenager and my dad became a goddess worshipping high priest of Wicca.
Right.
You know, which I guess is a very feminine religion and faith, and also very spiritual and esoteric. So I had all of that in my background, and then I just kind of, you know, forgot about it, went on, was a young person, was interested in partying and going out and, you know, my education and all those kinds of things. This went on for many, many years, and I found myself a little bit lost in my late 20s, and that's when I started to look back on my own life and what spirituality was to me, because I just felt that there was something there that I was missing that I needed to grab hold of, and something that I missed, you know, because I always felt like I was quite a spiritual child and definitely quite philosophical and deep, and I think a lot of children are, but it's not nurtured. So I had to nurture it in myself when I was in my late 20s and rediscover that side of myself. And that's, you know, my first book was The High-Heeled Guide to Enlightenment. So that was me going out and exploring other people's faiths and really getting to grips with them and getting gritty with them and doing them, and alternative faiths particularly. And really from there, just seeing what they meant to me and what I learned from that. Then my next book was, you know, taking that into my everyday life, and, you know, The High Heeled Guide to Spiritual Living is just that, is how do you then convert, you know, all these amazing learnings into everyday living. And so those books were quite different. And then obviously I got pregnant, and the Poppy Seed was is the actual diary of my pregnancy that I actually wrote by hand. every sort of day and night. And, you know, it's spiritual, it's hormonal, it's crazy one minute, it's angels the next. And at the heart of it, of course, it's my daughter, who I think is possibly the biggest spiritual trip I've ever been on, and the most human. So, yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
So, what inspired you to start writing these books? Did you always want to be a writer?
I think I did. I remember when I was younger, I always kept a diary when I was a teenager. I mean, I look back on it now, and that's quite embarrassing. Some of the things that are written in there that by no means should ever be published. But, you know, I loved writing. And then I kind of lost that for a while. You know, like I said, I got caught up in a world of partying and boys and weekends and what dress you were going to wear and, you know, all of that kind of thing, which I think so many people do, you know, devote their lives to for a long time when they're, you know, in their, you know, late teens and early 20s. But it was then, because my husband's a musician, I started writing about music for a local magazine. And it was from there I thought that I really love writing about music and I love writing, but it wasn't quite sitting right. I was thinking it's my husband's thing, music's his thing, and whilst I'm enjoying doing it and having a spot in a local magazine, I decided I had to explore what, you know, and write about what actually meant something to me. And it just came to me one day, I just thought, look, I'm going to do a blog and I'm going to call it The High Heel Guide to Enlightenment. And then I was in the shower and, you know, as you are, these big profound moments tend to happen just doing mundane, ordinary things. And it just came to me, no, this isn't a blog, it's a book, it's going to get published, and that's your thing. And that's switched overnight from, you know, music writer to blog to book. So, and then, yeah, I was lucky and I got a publisher straight away and it just kind of flowed. It was lovely.
That's very cool. I love how it's The High-Heeled Guide to Spiritual Living. So I'm going to read what's on your website here. It's won Prediction Magazine's Best Book Award and has received many excellent reviews from readers and publications. It is also featured by Amanda de Codonet. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
The Conversation is one of their Truth and Wisdom resources. The High-Heeled Guide to Spiritual Living discloses delicious spiritual secrets and intimately reveals how to easily manifest these mysteries into your reality. Very nice. Very nice. So you have the spiritual living and then guide to enlightenment. What are the differences?
Yeah. Well, in the High-Heeled Guide to Enlightenment was the first, and that was really just me putting myself in other people's hands and saying, show me your enlightenment, show me your spiritual faith. So I went out and, you know, I studied Buddhism and I went to Buddhism school for the weekend and, you know, I looked into things like shamanism and Wicca and all kinds of different types of divination techniques and healing techniques, you know, and I didn't just read about them, I went and did them, you know, so for example, shamanism, I went and did a sweat lodge and, you know, really took myself outside of my comfort zone. And this is from a girl who was previous to this just doing, like I say, not a lot, but living for the weekend. So that's where you get the high-heeled aspect, because I really want to connect to a modern audience who don't necessarily know anything esoteric or spiritual, but who have a yearning that they need to satisfy. And I wanted to write for them because there's so many amazing books out there that are deeply spiritual and profound and life-changing, but you kind of have to already be on the path to understand the language and to understand the concepts. And I just thought, no, I want to write for people who don't perhaps know that yet. You know, I want to, this is a bridge to those other books, and a bridge for me. You know, it was my bridge. So, enlightenment is very much me exploring other people's faiths and taking from that lessons and writing about that and writing on my personal learning. Spiritual living is different because that's me saying, okay, those faiths were great, but I don't need them. And actually deciding that I, as well as anyone else on this planet, is perfectly capable and qualified to experience spirituality of my own accord, without a book, without a guru, without a trip to India, and, you know, to get to know my own intuition and to explore that. So that second book is very much, you know, forgetting all the lessons that I've learned and actually throwing myself into my life saying, hey, I'm spiritual, what's going to happen next? And actually what did happen was crazy. You know, my life kind of, it wasn't all angels and fairy dust and light. All kinds of awful stuff happened. And that to me was, you know, spirituality and faith and, you know, the magic of the universe kind of conspiring to give me something interesting to write about and learn about. So they're both very personal books. So that's the one thing that ties them together.
Do you think that cosmically the adversity that you were going through at that time to really test your belief?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, anyone who's going through anything difficult, perhaps they're listening to this now and they're thinking, gosh, my life's really hard. I think all difficulty is sent to us for a reason. You might not know what that reason is until 20 years down the line. But I think life would be very dull and very boring if there was no adversity, just as my book would be very dull and very boring if I turned around and went, hey, you know, I'm spiritual and it's all really nice and every day I wake up and there's feathers on my pillow and, you know, or, you know, signs from God every time I drive my car. You know, it's no, you need all of that hardship. You need the chaos. You need the dirt and the grit and, you know, you need everything that you've done wrong and every guilty feeling you've ever had. All of those things kind of need to come up to the surface and need to be explored. And I guess that we're human for a reason. That's what I say in a lot of my writing is, you know, don't feel guilty. Don't feel like you're not worthy. And don't feel like you've done things that don't make you undeserving of a spiritual life. We are all spirit, but we're in a human body for a reason. We have temptation for a reason. We have cravings for a reason. You know, we get addicted for a reason. And awful, terrible, atrocious things happen in our lives, but they strengthen us and we grow and we become better. And, you know, and from all that chaos, you can have some really beautiful learning and life events. And I know for a fact, you know, if I hadn't had a lot of the chaos I had when I was writing The High Heel Guide to Spiritual Living, I know my daughter wouldn't be here now. I had to go through some really dark times to get to a better place, to be a better person, to be a better parent, to be the person I need to be for this moment in time. And so that is heartwarming for me now. Whenever anything bad happens in my life now, I know that there's a reason for the future. So,
well, it's funny.
People might take heart from that.
Question often why or how did I get through my adversity, and one of the key things that I hold on to as kind of my personal mantra that I designed was, I need to look at it in one or two ways. My world's either falling apart or I'm having growing pains.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that great?
That's
because
right.
you have a choice. Yeah, you have absolutely a choice as to whether or not you allow the crumbling of your world, or if you just take some Advil, breathe through it, and go through the growing pains and acknowledge. And I think that's when you really recognize your spirituality, when you really start awakening, is you can really step back and say, okay, is this really crumbling? Is this like the end of the end? Because we feel that way, and those emotions are really, you know, our emotions are very naive. They're young children. Mm-hmm. And I think we go through adversity and we go through this process of maturing that emotional aspect of who we are.
Yeah.
In my opinion. So tell us what the journey was like becoming a mom, because she was a surprise, right?
She was not so much a surprise as she came very quickly. We went from not wanting children to wanting them quite quickly. And I think I'd always harbored a liking for wanting a little girl. I always had this vision of me and a little girl. And I've had that for quite a long time. And some of my friends remember me kind of fantasizing about it, you know, 5 or 6 years ago when I really was in no place to be thinking about having a child. And then basically, yeah, we kind of said, oh, go on, then let's try. And then I think a week later we were pregnant.
Oh,
so
my God.
It was a surprise in that respect. We were very lucky, you know. And I hear stories, you know, obviously I was so naive the whole pregnancy. I didn't realize, you know, how lucky we were to get to get pregnant that quickly and to have a healthy, normal, happy pregnancy. I mean, being pregnant has been the whole education, just learning about pregnancy in general, and obviously not everyone has that experience. And actually it's quite common, you know, that people have miscarriages and all kinds of awful tragedies. And so I feel that I was very happily naive my entire pregnancy and didn't have any of those worries because I just didn't realise. The journey to becoming a mother was completely life-changing. I just feel like it's tipped me over into being a whole new version of myself. And I really like it. And I really like being this new person. And I like the fact that, you know, every single second of my day is completely consumed with this little soul and has been since the day I learned I was pregnant, if not since before then. And it's a beautiful experience. I mean, we talk in spirituality about giving over and releasing and, you know, letting go of the ego. Well, my God, having a child.
You have a lot of ego to let go of.
Careful.
With having a baby.
Yeah, you can't have an ego. What's that? There's no space for one. Maybe it climbs back in after a little while, but especially when they're little babies, you just become a slave to them, but a very willing and very happy one I was. So.
Yeah, I mean, between the vomit and the poop and the snot and all of the other wonderful things, and that's just your hair.
Yeah, which you then don't wash even though you know you should.
Right. It's always in a ponytail. And Yeah. I think it evolves. I don't think it changes. I think mine's 8 now. It took me 6 years to actually have her. And long story short, they told me I would never have children. But I think I manifested her. And she's still... pulls the carpet out from under me. She's just very wise and very much a white light and such joy that I'm humbled to have created this amazing person. So I don't, you know, minus the puke and the vomit and all that stuff, I don't have to deal with that anymore and the diaper changing, but there's no ego. You still don't have time for ego. And I haven't found that yet.
Well, and I just found that the love is just, you know, your whole life you're looking for love, you're looking for a partner, and then you have a child, and it kind of puts everything in perspective, because the love that you have for a child is so immense and so, I don't know, astrological, universal, just this massive, mind-blowing thing, and you almost feel like, how can you possibly contain it all? And that's an incredible journey, and it's in and of itself. It's trying to contain that and deal with it alongside everything else that comes with it and the sleepless nights and just the worry that takes over and then trying to be spiritual and not worry and, you know, and then find yourself turning a little bit into your mother and it's a real trip, this motherhood thing.
Yep. Absolutely. So you were... Actually, if there's anybody out there that wants to ask Alice questions, feel free to call in. The number here is 347-205-9443. And I'm in the chat room waving to everybody. So hello, chat room people. I know a lot of you sneak me at work. But Alice is here. She's live. And definitely pick her brain. She's an amazing woman. In a few minutes, we're going to go on a quick break. But this is a perfect time for you, Alice, to shamelessly promote yourself, because I know you're in all kinds of places. So how do we find you?
Okay. I'm on my website is Alice Grist, that's ALICEGRIST.co.uk. I'm on Twitter, just Alice Grist. I also have a Facebook page called High-Heeled Happy Spirit. So it'd be really nice to hook up with people if they want to, you know, come join those places, because I keep those, you know, updated with all my articles that I do and whatever's going on with books. And also, the High Heel Guide to Spiritual Living should be very soon on digital, for digital readers for a very limited time for, I think it's $1.63. So keep your eye open for that, because that would be nice if people can get a bargain. And that should be happening quite soon.
Oh, that's fantastic, actually. That was my second question. Are your books in the U.S. yet?
Oh, yeah. They're all available
there. Okay,
on
so we can get it on Amazon and all of that?
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. So we're going to go for a real quick break, and you can run and check the kids to make sure they haven't duct taped anybody to the ceiling. Does it happen?
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
All right. Welcome to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty, and today is Humpty Hump Day. It is a magical, icy winter land, and I really think Jack Frost needs to retire. It is terribly cold out there. I think we've got up to a whopping 10 degrees. Yes, 10 degrees. I'm so ready to move to Florida, going back home soon. Anyway, today I am thrilled to have the author, blogger, writer, healer, spiritual woman in fabulous high heels, Alice Grist. She is calling in from England, and we're just living and thriving and chatting, and she's indulging us with who she is, what she does, and her writing. She's got some pretty amazing things out there for us to sink our teeth in and really enhance and challenge ourselves as individuals to grow and thrive and heal, because that's what this show is all about, right? Alice, are you back?
Yes, I'm here, yeah.
Okay, great. So what do you think would be kind of a baby step way of coming into your womanhood? You know, I love the fact that your books are called The High-Heeled Guide to whatever, enlightenment, spiritual living. I'm sure you're going to have a few more. I think for women especially, we have a tendency to become unbalanced in our life. We put more care into other people. We put more care into kind of the outskirts of ourselves, and we stop wearing heels, and we stop taking care of ourselves, and we stop that beautiful sexual energy that we are, that got us on the inside. And we go through that phase. So for women out there who are thinking about getting back into the heels and you know, waxing the eyebrows thinner and becoming that sexual goddess that they used to be, because we get kind of a break sometimes, what would you recommend as a step-by-step, baby-step, coming out of your closet into spirituality and really embracing who you are?
I think the main thing that springs to mind is, you know, like you're saying, really, is that women are so focused on the external, on, you know, getting their makeup right and presenting a certain face to the world, or, you know, looking at everyone else. And the one thing that so many women are missing, and I know I was missing, was any kind of internal dialogue. Now, people might hear that and think, okay, I do have an internal dialogue. I'm constantly worrying about A, B, C, D, E, F, G, etc. But I'm not talking about the thoughts that spring through your mind constantly all day long, you know, probably at a fast pace and cause you stress and anxiety. I'm talking about an internal dialogue with the real you, your intuition, your higher self. Because it's all very well and good to think, I'm going to go out into the world and look for spirituality. And because we're so used to looking outside of ourselves for anything, you might think, okay, well, I'll go to yoga, or I'll go and I'll buy a book on spirituality, or I will watch a TV show, or I will, you know, buy a pair of spiritual pants, or, you know, wear a crystal on my wrist, you know, on my finger or something like that. But really, you need to completely cut off from all of those external things, because they're just delusions, really, because they're a representation of spirituality, but they're not the real thing. The real thing is not far away. It's actually inside of you right now. It's that little voice that you ignore. It's your intuition. It's your gut instinct. It's the times when you know there's something wrong with your friend, even though they won't tell you what it is. It's the times that you know he's on the other end of the phone when it rings. It's the times when your heart tells you not to do something, but you go ahead and do it anyway, and then you regret it, and you think, I wish I'd listened to that little voice. And I think that's the very best and really the only place anyone can start to get to know their own spirituality and their own femininity and their own an understanding of who they are as a woman, or, you know, indeed a man. I think this applies to anyone. And that little inner voice can't be dictated to you by anyone. I can't tell you what that voice is saying. Only you can know that. It's a completely unique experience that you're living and that you're going through, and yet we constantly paper over these internal experiences with other stuff, by reading magazines, by watching telly, by going on the internet and forming opinions about what other people are saying on Facebook. And actually all the time we're just ignoring and avoiding the most amazing source of spiritual inspiration, which is ourselves. And some people might listen to this and think, but I'm not spiritual, I'm not that interesting, I'm not inspirational. But I beg to differ. I think we all are. And I think anyone who chooses to listen to that little voice and listen to it for long enough will find a huge vat of wisdom and comfort as well.
One of the things that I find most interesting, and I'd love your opinion on this, is, and you've tapped into it a little bit, but I call it the noisy head. We have noisy brains.
Mm-hmm.
Our head is just constantly clogged with all of this stuff that, you know, it's almost like a mental congestion.
Yeah.
And if we were to stop, like you had stated earlier, I love how you said paper over, and, you know, you're putting paper over things. It's like an avoidance tactic almost. I personally think our noisy brains are a way to deny our mortality, a way to deny reality, which is actually a very simple and beautiful and peaceful and quiet place. But we have to fill ourselves up with something to feel.
And we live in a society that encourages it. You know, we're constantly bombarded with information to think about and worry about and to do things with. And that's just, you know, 5 minutes watching the televisions and an advert break, you know. Then there's all the signposts around us and, you know, what other people are saying, and working in maybe a busy environment, and, you know, all the thoughts and voices and opinions that we come across on a day-to-day basis, and, you know, the newspapers and magazines, and there's all this information. I mean, it must be that our human brains are so more crowded than they ever, ever have been. And I think perhaps we're all more miserable than we ever, ever have been. And this is something I'm actually writing my next book about, is, you know, it's about trying to find happiness, because I think people aren't happy, and I think part of it is this constant papering over of anything real in our mind, and constantly, you know, replaying other people's stuff in our head, worrying about all kinds of stuff that hasn't even happened and might never happen, to the point that everything that's going on in our head is completely false and deceptive, but it's keeping us from any kind of truth. And like you say, yeah, perhaps we are afraid of that silence. Perhaps we're not familiar with it. No one's ever taught us how to deal with it or what it means. And so we think of it as nothingness, when in fact it's so much more than nothingness, because it's a peaceful, loving, wise calmness, really, rather than nothingness. And so, you know, I would just advise people, you need to work on mindfulness and cutting back on all of these gazillion voices that are, you know, letting go in your head and causing you craziness. And that's without, you know, even having any kind of mental health issue. That's just a normal, everyday experience for most people. It's just a billion thoughts rushing through their heads. And it's not healthy, and it doesn't achieve anything, and it certainly doesn't solve anything. So, yeah, I think there's a great need for people these days to find their way to calm those voices, whether that's meditation or gardening, or, you know, I find things like cooking, you know, things where you lose where you're very involved with your hands and your heart, and the mind kind of shuts off. So whatever people need to do to find that silence and that peace is well worth doing.
I wonder how much of it is environmental. I wonder how much our holding on to that chatting, avoidance, dull head has to do with what we learned as a child in regards to other people's expectations and other people's demands of each other. What do you think?
Yeah, I've not thought about it that way, but yeah, I can imagine, you know, growing up, you're given so many, like you say, expectations and how you're supposed to behave and how you're supposed to act. So I guess there's always that worry around adhering to all of that. And then just environmental in your day-to-day as well. Because I find, you know, I used to work in an office. I used to go to a gym. And when I used to do all of those things, I was around a lot of other people, having a lot of conversations. I was a lot more worried and a lot more stressed and a lot more strained and a lot more thoughts dashing through my head. You know, and I never had any headspace, any clear time just to have nothing. And I never allowed myself that. Since I started a spiritual journey, I make sure that I do have that. And since having my daughter, my life's very different. You know, I'm not in an office. I don't go to the gym. I don't really, you know, I'm mainly just me and her most of the time. And so I'm not bombarded with other people's information. And that really hugely helps. But at the same time, you still need to, you know, you could still choose to, and it is a choice, you could still choose to allow all kinds of worries and thoughts to go through your mind. And again, you do have to choose not to do that and make that conscious decision. I'm not going to worry about this, I'm not going to worry about that, and stopping the thoughts as they arise. And think about something more positive, or lose yourself in an activity so you're not thinking of anything. And I find that is a much more pleasant and healthy way to live.
I'm wondering if we are starting to evolve a generation that will be committed to having more positive outlets in the workplace and in the gym. I go to the gym every day, and I actually, I was telling my gym partner, yeah, I think it was yesterday, I said, you know, I don't have cable TV. I don't watch cable TV. I think it's very toxic and very negative and very expensive for all the toxic negativity that is given. And yet when I go to the gym and I'm sitting on the treadmill, running on the treadmill, not sitting, laugh it up, guys, on Facebook. I know I caught myself running on the treadmill. All I see are these negative images for the 30 minutes that I'm running. Mm-hmm. I'm not plugged in audio to the TVs, but, you know, it's war and TV talk shows where there's, like, domestic violence and just all kinds of negative stuff. So I try to look down. but I'm actually honestly curious as to whether or not you think that we're, our generation is really starting to create this environment of less inundation of that type of stuff, work environment, work balance. Go ahead.
I would hope so. I see evidence of it. I see, you know, in the world I move in and the things that I read, I see evidence of people trying to change the world, trying to calm it, trying to, you know, insert spiritual, healthy ideas into all aspects of life. But then, on the other hand, I see that, you know, and I say this to my husband, I say, we're living in dark ages. You know, some of the stuff that goes on, I think we'll look back on this in a few hundred years' time and go, those were the true dark times. Because there's some, you know, as much as some people are trying to insert light and are achieving that, there's also other elements of society who aren't there yet and who are living in a way that spreads darkness and negativity. And but at the same time, I see a fight against it. I think it's a real turning point. I really do. And I think it's almost like, you know, this battle between the good heart of humanity and the dark heart. And I think it's playing out right now. And so I hope that over the next few generations that we can really change things. That would be my greatest desire, you know, especially now I have a child. I'd love for her to live in a world that's nicer, especially being a female. You know, I read a lot of stuff about sexism and feminism and how, you know, women still haven't, you know, still have a big struggle, and I find that myself and have found that in my life. And I'd love that to change for her, as well as any other kind of ism or, you know, unfairness and inequality and negativity and negative things. You know, Mike on telly at the gym, as you say. It would be nice for the tide to turn. It would be wonderful.
Yeah, I was laughing at my gym partner yesterday. I was like, you know, and she's married and I'm divorced, so I get her to blush often. I said, you know, I've decided when I hit my big time and I own my own natural network, I'm going to have a TV show dedicated to women in their 30s and older that are single. It's going to be called Gladiators, and it's going to be Gladiator Men, and that's all you see for the entire time you're on the treadmill. And I can guarantee that with that, admissions to all the gyms across the country will totally, like, quadruple. So, you know, it's a win-win for everybody. The Gladiator Station. But I think you're right. I think the more that we are open and honest and creative and almost demanding, there's this gathering of individuals that are spiritually inclined. And I say spiritually inclined. I'm also including religious organizations that are really pushing, as a unit, all of us are pushing to have this more positive outlook and more positive thinking and lifestyles. But I've also noticed the increase of crime and the increase of, I don't know, again, I only get TV when I go to the gym, and all I see is this grotesque negative stuff. It just seems to be more than what I remember it being when I did have TV. Does that make sense?
I know what you mean. I see it like an extreme, almost like mushrooming of awful, awfulness, just awful, awful, awfulness. And I think to myself, am I just more aware of it? Are we all more aware of it because of social media making things more apparent? You know, the darkness can't hide in the corners the way it used to. So we're all, you know, appraised of it every single day. I don't know. But I do see, I think maybe because it's being brought out because of things like the internet, because the dark side of humanity is becoming so much more apparent and everyone's so much more aware of it, then people are more willing to fight against it. So there may be a bit of a battle ahead, but let's hope we win.
Amen to that. So in the last few minutes with you, I would love for you to give over 100,000 international listeners what you want people to take away from today's show. What do they take away from you?
I think my thing, the reason I started writing books in the first place about spirituality is because I just want people, as I wanted for myself when I started writing, is to find some kind of peace and some kind of harmony in their life. And the best place for them to start looking is themselves, in their own hearts, in their own minds, their own gut instinct, that feeling that you have, you know, sort of in between your rib cages. You know, start to listen to that, start to explore it, because it takes you to beautiful places, and it's taken me to beautiful places. And I'll say, you know, as an author, you know, as much as I'd love people to go out and buy my books, I will also say, and I say this quite freely in my books, you don't need a book, you don't need a guide, you don't need a guru, you don't need an expensive trip around the world to find yourself, because you're here. You're here right now, you're listening to me, your heart and soul and spirit and physicality are all one. You are amazing universal energy. You are as valid a spiritual entity as anyone else, be that the Pope, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Nelson Mandela, or any other incredible person. We're all completely equal in the eyes of spirit and the universe. And you just got to start believing it. You know, that's the only problem. Just start believing it. Just start finding your own way. Start listening to your inner self. Stop the clutter that goes off in your mind. And just breathe into who you are a little bit. And hopefully, you know, your spirit will soon arise and you'll see it and you'll feel it. And life will change, because it, you know, it did for me. And it was for the absolute best. And that's all I want for anyone, really. And I think the world would be a better place. And that's me and my utopia. So there you go.
Well, it's a beautiful utopia. And I think many of us are striving to design this. And the more individuals out there talking and learning and advocating and preaching and teaching positive living, I think the more people are touched and we can share that. I think it's one of the best contaminants in the world, contagion, is to share that joy and have other people become joyful. And I love how you say you have to believe in it. You have to believe in yourself. And one of the things that I highly, you know, it triggered what you said, triggered for me, was if there is something that you want to do or you don't want in your life, that is the first sign of intuition. Right?
Very true.
If there's, it's really that simple. If your gut's going, no, I don't, that's your intuition saying you don't want it, you don't need it. So you don't have to be,
you have to trust it.
Say it again?
I said you just have to trust it. I think that's the difficult thing about intuition. It's actually really easy. It's the trusting it and going with it that's difficult. So that's all people have to do, really, is to find that trust.
Exactly. But the very basic step there is if you're at the grocery store and you go to grab something and you're like, ew. But just that split second of questioning what you're doing, that's your intuition. So once you start acknowledging that split second is your intuition, which is actually just internal protective device that is kind of like an internal alarm clock, then you can start trusting it. So step by step. Everybody can do this step by step. I promise it works. So, Alice, what is on your list of things to do, my fabulous creative friend?
Well, it's difficult these days with having the little one, but I think I am working on another book, and it's called High Heeled Happy Spirit. That's the working title anyway. And I guess, you know, it's more aimed at happiness than it's a spiritual approach to happiness, but more about happiness, because I think when anyone starts a spiritual path, the reason they do so is because they're not happy and they want to find something deeper. So I thought rather than making it a book about spirituality that may put off some readers, I'd rather introduce spirituality through finding that trip for happiness and at the same time help some people get happy. So that's really the next thing on my list to do, and it's about the only thing I can fit. Oh, and I'm going to be on a TV show.
Yay, tell us about it.
I almost forgot. It was filmed when I was pregnant, so this is why I forget about it, because it seems like another lifetime ago, and it's going to be shown worldwide. I think it's going to be on BBC Worldwide, and I'm not sure what the title is for America, but it's in England, it's going to be called She's Having a Baby, and I'm not sure, I'm sorry, I can't remember what it's called for America, but it's a program about pregnancy and people's approaches to pregnancy, and obviously mine was a spiritual approach. So that should be out later this year if people are interested.
Yay, that's great. As soon as you find out when it airs, let me know, and I'll post it for everybody to see. I think that's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks. Good stuff. All right, my dear. So we have a book coming out, and your TV show will be coming out soon. And
yes,
where can we find you again?
I imagine. You can find me at alicegrist.co.uk, and or you can find me on Twitter, Alice Grist, or Facebook, High Heeled Happy Spirit. So come find me.
And you write for the Huffington Post, correct?
Huffington Post, I write for the Daily Law, for the Conversation, sometimes for Hello Giggles. So, yeah, a few different places.
Very cool. And everybody can find that on your website as well, so if they want to follow you?
Yeah, and my articles are all linked through, and hopefully people can find it. And if you can't, let me know, because I do my own website at the moment. So if it's not perfect, let me know and I'll change it.
I think it's a lovely website, so it looks good.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I am grateful that we finally were able to connect. I love, love, love what you do. I'm glad that you're able to spread your wings of joy and thinking and positive energy to thousands of other people. We need it, and we need more people like you. So hopefully you just inspired many people to pick up that path of just understanding intuition a little bit better and becoming a little bit more spiritual, and that it's okay not to surround yourself by negativity. I think those were the real big keys that I took away from today.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon. Thank you, Alice.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Oh, my gosh. What a fabulous person. So go to alicegrist.co.uk, and you can see her, and she's beautiful. She has her books and her blogs, and let's see. And evidently she does tarot reading, too, which I didn't even ask her about. But go and visit Alice Grist at alicegrist.co.uk and check her out. Really, really, really wonderful guest that I had today. I am grateful. Who is on Sunday? Sunday. I don't even remember now. We are booking up until July at this point. It has been crazy. Poor Karen has a huge picture of me with the dartboard theme, because her inbox is getting inundated by hundreds of requests. poor Karen. I love you. Lisa Arena, tarot reader. She has been on the show before. She was on last year, and she's actually going to be on this Sunday at 6:30 p.m. And I guess Lisa's going to be talking a little bit about her lifestyle and what she does, and she's going to offer free tarot reading. So tune in if you want to have your cards read. Lisa, again, they'll probably be about 2-minute readings per person. Last time it was crazy busy and we couldn't get everybody on. And then Wednesday I have Catherine A. Marshall. She is a PhD, of Willie. And that is a great organization that supports women all over the world with life skills and so forth. So I'm looking forward to talking with Catherine as well. So now you know what the week, last week of January looks like for us here at Living and Thriving. I love you. I think you're beautiful. You are amazing, and I can't wait to talk to you again on Sunday. Keep those emails coming in. Keep those ideas coming in. Again, we're booking until July, and if you know anybody who wants to sponsor Living and Thriving with Rusty, please let me know, because I'd like to do this 5 days a week. That's how much demand I have, but I have to pay Karen and myself. So sponsorship is very important in order to make that happen. And here's a place where you could be advertised.
Tune in weekly to Living and Thriving with Rusty McDonald. Inspiration on tap. A radio talk show that is down to earth, organic, and reflects years of experience and humility. Tune in and join Rusty McDonald as she explores topics related to mind, body, and soul. Visit her website for more information, www.rustymcdonald.com.
Well, ending this beautiful January 22nd of 2014 on a high note. I love you. You're beautiful. I am so glad that we get to walk this path together and learn and explore and include so many wonderful, amazing, talented souls on our path of living and learning and thriving. Until next Sunday, I will talk to you then.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.